Hi, it's Tuesday, 14th of April. I'm Gary Bauman from Check In Asia.
And I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
On today's show, we'll take a look at the latest regional impact of COVID-19 on travel and tourism, which makes pretty grim reading. And we'll look ahead at the destinations that may be able to reboot their domestic and inbound sectors ahead of everybody else. Maybe.
Maybe. So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show. Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thank you for listening in. Well, we're still locked down here in Malaysia. The movement control order has been extended until the 28th of April. And there's almost no travel really going on anywhere. But there's still plenty to talk about, and we'll sift through the current, rather depressing, stats and look ahead to hopefully sunnier skies in the distance.
Yeah, you're right, Hannah. All we can really do at the moment is look forward with hope, hopefully. Because the global collapse of travel and tourism is totally unprecedented and it's having a massive impact in our region here in Southeast Asia. But we'll get to that in a minute. Firstly, though, Hannah, it's great to have you back on the pod after a week out. What have you been up to over the last week?
Well, it's been mainly entertaining a two-year-old again. But I've also managed to squeeze in working on our very first mini briefing and the cheat sheet. So those were two new initiatives that we launched part of the Southeast Asia Travel Show last week. So we sent out our first email with our mini briefing last Friday. So that was great, and great to see it was really well received as well. And we have finished off our cheat sheet as well. So if you do want to sign up for those, just head on over to our LinkedIn page, and we've got links there to sign up, or on our Facebook page too.
Yeah, last week was a big week for us. We launched the monthly cheat sheet and our new weekly mini briefings, which last week featured Philippines, and this week will feature Singapore. And we also introduced our first two guest interview pods, which were very well received.
They were. I was a bit jealous that you got to do those, actually. So tell us a little bit more about those. Who were you interviewing last week?
Yeah, they were good fun. We did two interviews last week with two experienced Southeast Asia travelers and content publishers. So first up was Nikki Scott, who's the founder of Southeast Asia Backpacker Travel Portal. And then we interviewed Stuart McDonald, who's the founder of Travelfish, a specialist information and service portal for intrepid travelers in the region. Both those interviews produced some fascinating insights about how independent travel was changing in the region before COVID-19. Yeah. Obviously the current impact that it's having, which is obviously huge, and also the real impact on small communities. There's a lot of backpacker and independent traveler focus throughout Southeast Asia is in small local communities. So micro businesses and small tourism operators in those regions are having a very, very hard time. And when we were looking ahead at the future, some of the comments, particularly from Stuart, weren't particularly optimistic about the way that this is going. I think he said that if you look from today, we're probably looking at 2.5 years until any substantial recreational tourism restarts in those regions.
Yeah, my heart just sank when he said that.
Yeah, me too.
What I found really interesting, actually, that I hadn't thought about so much was his point, you know, if you're taking a destination like Bali, a lot of people are not actually from Bali who are working there in the hospitality sector.
Yep.
And they're all from, you know, very rural places, different islands. And so during this kind of downtime, you know, these hotels are closed, tourism businesses are closed, they're going to go back to their hometowns.
Yep.
And then when these companies are starting to reopen, whenever that will be, they're going to have to rehire. They're going to have to go through the whole process again. You know, these previous staff might have to, you know, they have to move back to Bali or find, you know, places to live. It's not as easy as, right, we're open and everything is exactly the same as before.
Totally agree. And that extrapolates not just in the hotel sector, but across the whole travel sector. So airlines are having exactly the same problem. They're laying off staff who will probably go back to their hometowns. This is in every country of the region as well. But we spoke also during the research, I spoke to the owner of a farm stay business in central Vietnam, a small business who's been up and running for a few years in an area of central Vietnam that for a long time was off the main travel sort of route. But some intrepid travelers in the last few years have started traveling there, and it sort of created a small micro-tourism economy. But she was very, very gloomy about the future right now because central Vietnam is currently in lockdown. And she said, no one is allowed to receive new guests and the tourism industry is grinding to a halt. Yeah. A lot of business people have been left with unachievable debt repayment concerns. She added, we have had a few good years of fast development, but now we're all concerned about when, how, and if the industry will be able to recover from this monumental blow, which is pretty heartbreaking to hear.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've been also having a look and keeping track of the impact of what's going on really in Southeast Asia as you know, a result of knock-on effect from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty gloomy, but there are some kind of key trends that you can actually see happening in all of these different countries.
Yep.
So, I mean, one of the main things, obviously, tourist arrival numbers are hugely down.
Yep.
So both Thailand and Vietnam have released their Q1 arrival numbers. And Thailand was down 40% on last year, which is pretty massive.
Yep.
Vietnam owned 18%. Probably quite a good result for Vietnam,
right,
all considered. But, you know, it's still, you know, down by almost a fifth.
Yeah. And then you look at the underlying trends on those bigger numbers. So you mentioned there Thailand. I think you said, 40% overall?
Yes. Yeah.
But then you look at some of its key markets. And so like China, so far the figures for the first quarter were down 59.4%.
Yeah.
The figures from Hong Kong down 49.8%. South Korea, 44.2%. You know, these are the key markets that drive tourism in ordinary times. And, you know, to reboot those numbers in future is going to be very, very difficult.
I mean, other key themes that have kind of leapt out at me of what's happening across the region is I think uniformly most people in the travel industry are not feeling like governments are supporting them adequately.
Right.
In terms of economic stimuli.
Yep.
So you've got Singapore. I think Singapore has done a really good job, actually, and everybody seems to be pretty happy with it. But you've got countries like Malaysia.
Yep.
Who have... I think now they've released it. It's like their third stimulus now, which was last week, which was supporting SMEs. But again, a lot of tourism businesses are saying it's not really going far enough. You know, it's got some slightly higher wage subsidies than before.
Yep.
But it's still not enough to help them with cash flow issues.
Yep.
You've got the same thing in places like Thailand, where they're asking the government for help.
Yeah.
You have...
Going back to Malaysia there, I mean, there's one of the interesting points I was reading about Australia the other day is I think one of the reasons that the tourism stimulus, the stimulus for the tourism industry has been quite underwhelming is simply because the level of borrowing that governments are having to undertake to meet the basic challenges of this crisis. There was a very good article in the Sydney Morning Herald at the weekend talking about the debt legacy in Australia of the borrowing, because the stimulus package there has been huge, but it's all mostly borrowed money from the government. And, you know, so in the future, how is the government going to repay these debts? You know, taxes will probably have to rise. You know, there are going to be certain impacts on ordinary lifestyles. I wonder in Malaysia if the case is simply that the government just will not be able to cope with the borrowing requirement to help people out.
Yeah, it could well be. It could well be, I think. I mean, in Malaysia, you've also got this very interesting kind of conversation around airline refunds.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught sight of that, Gary. So
you've
got MATA, which is the Malaysian Association of Travel and Tour Agents, who came out last week with a statement demanding that airlines give refunds back to customers.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you know, you're making everybody's lives difficult, basically, by giving credit notes. What you actually need to do is refunds.
Yeah.
Then you had MAVCOM, which is the aviation commission here. And they said, okay, well, yes, you know, airlines should be giving refunds, but hey, normally you should do it within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously extraordinary circumstances. So, you know, give them a bit of time, customers, they'll do it.
Yeah.
And then on the weekend, you had a letter from Tony Fernandez, who is, of course, the...
I got mine. Did you get yours?
I didn't. The founder of AirAsia. And his letter was essentially along the lines of, guys, you know, we're trying to keep all of our staff. We haven't fired any of our all-stars, which is what he calls their airline employees yet.
No.
But to do this, we need your support and we need you to accept our credit note.
Tony Fernandez's message has elicited a lot of different opinions. I've been following quite closely on social media in the last 24 hours the way that people have responded to this. So the travel industry and the Malaysian media as well have been quite critical that this is still we're still in the era of asking people to delay their flights, to take credit and to rebook into the future. Whereas a lot of the marketing side and the PR and the business side of social media were saying that, you know, this is the way to communicate with people. It was a very open, a very sort of informal letter. And rather than sending a stuffy letter, this is the way to do it. Doesn't really get to the point that the actual message is still the same, is that you're not going to get a refund unless you work really, really hard for it. You're going to have to delay your flight. I think that the key issue with delaying your flights at the moment for a lot of people, there's a number of issues, but the two main ones are safety and security. People don't know when they're going to feel safe and secure to travel again. But overriding that is they actually don't know when they'll be able to travel again. There is no exit strategies from governments about how long this is actually going to take. And one of the key problems we have in Southeast Asia, Hannah, is we're seeing at the moment, the numbers in Malaysia are quite low, that the actual case numbers and the death numbers, although they're way too high, we'd obviously love them to be a lot lower. Yeah. Relatively, they're quite low. But we're seeing what could really turn into a humanitarian crisis in Indonesia. We're seeing very, very rapidly rising figures in the Philippines right now. Yeah. Singapore is basically given up its previous strategy and it's now gone into lockdown. I know that it calls it the circuit breaker, but it is a lockdown. So the whole region has to come out of this together, because otherwise there's just going to be no travel flows between countries at all for the foreseeable future. I know that sounds incredibly gloomy, but I just don't think until people feel safer to travel and they're actually getting more information about when they can travel, that they will even start planning holidays.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I think the other thing about this AirAsia refund issue is they're essentially asking people not to get their money back so that they can save AirAsia, aren't they? That's what he's saying. You know, if you all ask for your refunds, AirAsia's going to go under.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, people need their money back probably to pay bills, because they probably had a salary reduction at this point, or they're, you know, they're on unpaid leave. Yeah. They need that money back. So, you know, that morally, who's right? You know, who should get their money back?
100%.
At the end of the day, right? So it's a funny, I mean, there's no clear-cut answer, is there?
We're not. I think I 100% agree. I think we're really moving into this sort of middle point of moving from what is essentially a healthcare and a human vulnerability crisis into what is going to be a fully blown economic crisis. And that interim period is very, very difficult to deal with, because, as you say, if companies do start refunding, you know, their cash flow is basically going to disappear. Most companies in this whole industry are earning no revenue right now, and we don't know how long they're going to be able to supply it. They're going to be able to survive on their, you know, their savings, essentially, their reserves. We simply don't know that. I got a message yesterday from somebody in the aviation industry in Asia who doesn't want his name mentioned, but he said he just doesn't see how any commercial airliner that cannot be saved by its government over the next 6 months will survive. It's just not going to be possible.
Yeah, it's bleak.
It is very bleak, yeah. Because that, you know, as we've said in the past few weeks, Hannah, the whole infrastructure of travel is collapsing around us. And the airlines are the arteries for the whole industry. If airlines go bust, or even if they merge and there are less flight routes, you know, demand and passenger numbers are, you know, even when people can travel again, are going to be much, much lower than they were before. And the knock-on impact for that, for people's livelihoods, jobs, all of these things, is we don't really know how that is going to play out, because it's going to be nasty.
It really is. So, Gary and I are both watching very closely as the tourism industry attempts to breathe life back into travel demand. So tourism boards are offering a range of photogenic video backdrops to brighten up your Zoom business meetings, destination videos with future-themed messaging constantly uploaded. And you've got the UNWTO's hashtag Travel Tomorrow campaign as well, that's slowly gaining momentum. On the upside, we've seen photos of big crowds at tourism sites in China. So that's nice. Tourism is going on somewhere. And people, you know, are finally breaking out of that lockdown. But, you know, international travel and tourism, like we were saying right now, is pretty much just virtual, isn't it, and vicarious?
Yeah, it really is. And actually, that's very interesting, because those pictures from China last week at some of the main tourism resorts, like Huangshan Mountain and the Great Wall, there were lots and lots of people there. Finally got the chance to get out and experience tourism. But initially, that sort of sent this sort of surge of electricity to the global tourism industry. You know, hopefully, maybe there will be some outbound Chinese travel in the near future. But there's also been very, very strong hints from the Chinese government. They are very, very aware that there could be a second wave of this virus. And until they're clear of that, there simply will not be any outbound travel. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think so.
So So that got us thinking, Hannah, about two things. Firstly, which destinations will be best placed to drive domestic tourism, hopefully in the coming months, hopefully at least towards the latter end of the year? And secondly, which countries might be able to achieve some form of inbound travel, if not at the end of this year, then early in 2021?
Yeah, so I asked the question on social media and we got a lot of really diverse feedback actually.
Yeah, we did.
To everyone, you know, that gave their thoughts, and we always love hearing new insights. But before we read out some of those responses, Gary, which countries do you think will make the first moves for both domestic travel and international arrivals?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, it's such a dynamic situation. And when you asked this question, which I think was about a week ago, I said, I think it will rely quite heavily on where, in our region anyway, it will rely quite heavily on where the Chinese carriers choose to reboot their capacities the earliest. In the last week, we're not sure whether that will happen. But I tend to think that the destinations that will come out of this strongly and earliest will be island nations, those that don't have land borders. So I'm plumping for Australia. I think Australia will have quite a strong rebound in domestic travel as soon as that can happen. If it's towards the end of this year, that's going to be tricky because you've got the bushfire season coming up, and obviously there's going to be a lot of people wary about traveling during that. But if early next year it is able and clear, I think you'll start seeing more flights coming from some Northeast Asian countries, hopefully from Southeast Asia. So I'm going for Australia. And what about you, Hannah?
For me, well, I think if I'm looking within the region, if we're talking about domestic travel, I think a country like Thailand or Vietnam is probably, I mean, for one, because they've got such diverse domestic travel products themselves, and they've also got quite large populations who are traveling around. And I think it just in terms of inbound travel, I would probably even go for Vietnam again. I think that the way that they're handling coronavirus at the moment seems to be really under control, the situation. They still, I think, have got less than 200 cases there, no deaths. They've got that border with China. It's a popular Chinese inbound destination, popular Korean destination as well. My bet is on Vietnam, actually.
Okay, well, I think I'm also going to say, we're going to come back to this in some of the comments we've got in a minute, but I also think on the domestic tourism, once we're able to travel interstate, which again, we don't know when that will be, I think Malaysia will come back quite quickly. Malaysians are really, really keen on traveling. And if they're not able to travel overseas, there are a lot of destination options in the peninsula. I think we'll see some growth. A lot of that will be car-driven growth because we don't know what the flight situation will be. But I would imagine that will come back relatively strongly as soon as we're able to do so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and one of the comments actually from Nora Zizi Bohan, who's the MD of Asutra Holidays, actually said the same thing. So he said, based on our survey of our clients, many say they will prefer to travel outbound after winter next year to feel safe. But for the domestic market, definitely there will be heavy competition starting from August onwards. So thank you for that feedback. That's quite an optimistic one, I think. So domestic travel starting from August in Malaysia.
Okay, so rebooting back to Australia, I spoke to Tony O'Connor, who's the managing director of Butler Caroy in Melbourne, for his thoughts. Tony has been posting a lot of information online about the flattening of the curve in Australia, and he's been doing some quite good statistical analysis. So I thought I'd canvass his views. He said to me that he thinks that obviously Australia is a large, diverse country with a substantial tourism infrastructure and a large travel industry that is itching to get back to work. So it would be reasonable to expect a recovery in domestic travel before international travel gets moving. But, he says, I would say it's unlikely to happen for at least several months. Our containment measures have been successful, and indications are that they will remain tightly in place for the long term. So there probably won't be much of a gap between the return of internal freedoms and the stepped resumption of international air travel on approved routes, which is a very interesting point. Mm. He goes on to say, which is a very important point, that there will be issues with the aviation sector, particularly as the two major carriers will be asking for taxpayer support. So he says, obviously, Australia is a very air-dependent nation, and there's a good chance that Qantas will need to be renationalised to help the economic recovery. Mm. Interesting points. Thanks for those, Tony.
Interesting, yeah. So if we turn to some of the other comments then. So Prem Prakash Yadav, who's a team supervisor at Khalsa and Wagolit in Mumbai, says it's still too early to predict. Domestic tourism will recover first, followed by inbound tourism. and the revival of inbound tourism would depend on how fast each country declares itself safe and coronavirus free.
Yep, hard to disagree with any of that. So looking at internationally, Esther Molina, who's a communications, PR and marketing consultant who specializes in aviation and hospitality and is based here in Malaysia, says, I suspect it will be a combination of factors. Which routes get opened up first, allowing access, but people may also look at how the destinations reacted and responded during the crisis. Those who were prepared to take active measures and ensure the safety of not only their own citizens, but visitors to the country may be favoured versus those who did not, which is a very good point.
Yeah, that is, especially how, you know, some countries have starting to get a reputation, I think, for not treating foreigners very well.
So yeah.
Definitely, yeah. That's going to bite them.
And one of the outcomes, perhaps, Hannah, as we hopefully we move out of this crisis, is that tourism may become a bit more political. I mean, it was starting to move that way anyway, but perhaps it will become a bit more of a political issue. But let's hope not.
Yeah, exactly. So Peter Sukanek, who's a cross-channel digital consultant in hospitality and tourism based in Vietnam, says, my bet is on Vietnam in the beginning, just because of how popular it is for two huge outbound markets where the COVID-19 situation seems to be improving consistently, China and Korea. So with Vietnam sitting on a situation where they have a low number of cases confirmed, it seems to make sense these countries will move to open borders first and get the cash flowing again ASAP.
I think that might be one of the only mentions apart from the domestic factors of a Southeast Asian nation being mentioned by any of our contributors. So Vietnam, I think thumbs up for that. Apart from yourself, Hannah, you said Vietnam.
I said Vietnam. We're the same. Peter and I, we agree.
So Ala Omolchenko, who's the senior manager of product development at Sierra Group, says, I vote for island destinations like Maldives, Mauritius and Seychelles. Yeah, agree with that, Ella.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like you were saying, you know, countries with no land borders are going to be well placed, provided that they can get those international air capacities up fast.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because there may be issues in filling planes if they try to scale up too quickly to destinations that, you know, there's going to be a lot of inbound traffic perhaps, but there won't be so much outbound traffic. So airlines will be quite cautious about that, I would imagine.
Yeah, so I mean, on this island theme, Sanjiwa Padma Kunchihua, who's the proprietor of Serendipity Tours in Colombo, says Sri Lanka.
Well, let's hope so. That's a beautiful island. Yeah. Let's hope they can recover very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. They already had their troubles last year.
They really did. Attacks, yeah, so. which really hit the industry very, very hard there. So Sumeya Hamdi, who's the founder of Halal Travel Guide, says, seeing how effectively South Korea has handled the crisis, I'd say they'd be one of the first. Their efficient sanitation and tracing is possibly the best in the region from what we've seen on official reports and from locals. That said, given how efficient they've been, officials may well err on the side of caution and delay welcoming international arrivals. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, they may well just choose to focus more on domestic tourism, might they, until and the region's a bit freer of coronavirus.
And it does have a strong domestic tourism sector, and I think last year they were really promoting that quite heavily in South Korea.
And Ronak Rathod says Hong Kong should be considered for their efforts to contain coronavirus. Nice call. And again, Hong Kong definitely needs some good news this year.
Yeah, it's had a horrendous 12 months. So any good news that they get, and he's right, they've been pretty successful in containing this, given their proximity to China.
Yeah, no, they really have. Yeah, I think they learned lessons from SARS there, didn't they?
Yeah, very much so. So finally, we've got Rajan Taylor, who's the owner of Unlimited Travel in Vadodara in Gujarat in India, says Dubai for sure, due to the vision and diversity it has to offer. Dubai is an interesting one there, because it is obviously this pivotal hub for airlines coming from east to west, west to east with Emirates. So that could work in two ways. If airlines are sort of starting to move again transcontinentally, potentially, but there's the issue that also you can bring the virus in and out quite easily. So how they'll respond to that, I don't know. But as a destination, it was starting to gain quite a lot of travel from the Philippines, I think was a big market for them last year, India and China as well. So Dubai is quite well placed, I would imagine. But we will see.
Yeah, exactly. So that brings us almost to the end of this edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show podcast.
It certainly does. But as we mentioned earlier, our new weekly mini briefing, which is sent out by email each Friday, is free to sign up for. So please join us on that. The details are on all of our social media channels and on our website. Subscribers also receive a free monthly cheat sheet, which is a monthly roundup of the key developments in travel and tourism across the 10 countries of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and we are covering things other than coronavirus as well.
In fact, we're deliberately trying to find stories that are only loosely based to coronavirus or even not at all.
So you can take a look at our January, February and March cheat sheets on our website at www.theseasiatravelshow.com. And drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com if you want to receive last Friday's mini briefing on the Philippines. So have a great week, everyone, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you soon.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.
See you.